Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome back to Not Another Mummy Podcast. I'm Alison Perry and this is episode 13. Is Amy Ransom, who is the author of The New Mum's Notebook, which is a fantastic journal for new mums, and it's got lots of advice and tips dotted throughout it. So it is a brilliant gift for a friend who's about to have a baby or who's just had a baby. Amy is very vocal about her experiences with postnatal depression. So I chatted to her about what she's been through, how she was diagnosed, how she got help. And she's got some excellent advice for anyone who's suffering from PND or who's feeling low and wondering whether they should seek help. We also spoke about those early new mum days. And I loved hearing Amy's thoughts on allowing yourself to go into a bit of a box set bubble when you've got a small baby. And I feel like I say this a lot, but I really enjoyed chatting to Amy. I feel like I got a lot out of our conversation, so I really hope that you guys do too. She's a very wise lady and she's got lots of great nuggets of advice about life in general. So I hope you enjoy. Welcome, Amy, to the podcast.
Hi, it's lovely to be here, Alison.
So we're sat in your house, aren't we?
We're in my house, which is a bit tidier than normal.
It's gorgeous. You've got a beautiful velvet sofa.
Lots of stains.
No, lovely, lovely, lovely. So you have written The New Mum's Notebook.
I have.
And it's like a journal, isn't it, for mums for the first year of motherhood.
Yes.
But it's also got lots of kind of really supportive bits to read kind of dotted throughout it, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's a real mix of articles, affirmations and kind of quotes and things that... What I wanted to happen was I wanted a new mum to have something that she could dip into daily and she could just see something that would lift her mood or just, I mean, you know, the things in there, lots of the stuff is very obvious, but it's not obvious when you're navigating those early weeks, early months with a new baby and you're tired and you're, you know, you're hormonal and you're just not feeling your most amazing self. I wanted a mum to just feel nurtured and supported and like she had a friend by her side.
That's so lovely. And you're so right that in those early weeks and months, you need someone to remind you of all of those basic, basic things, don't you? Because your brain is another place.
I think it's paralysing. I think, you know, my kids are 8, 5 and 3 now. And I honestly feel like I'm emerging. Mm-hmm. And then I remember, and I was talking to a playgroup mum the other day who's got 2 kids. And we were talking about a friend who just had a newborn, her firstborn. And they were like, you know, rabbit in headlights like we all are. And I was remembering that first couple of weeks with my first week, you know, 2 weeks, 8 weeks, and just thinking, this is quite horrendous. Mm. I'm not sure that I'm ever going to have a life ever again.
Yeah, you definitely feel that way.
Yeah.
Like, looking back, you're like, oh, that was such a short period of time. But when you're going through it, you think, oh my goodness, this is my life now.
I remember sitting over there and my husband eating dinner and me waiting for my turn to eat dinner. And us looking at each other and going, do you think we'll ever eat at the same time? And he'd be like, right, you can hold the baby now and then I'll hold the baby. And I'm like, that was bonkers because we could have just put her down.
I know. I did the same thing. We took turns holding the baby. There was one night when my husband Mark and I took turns sitting up with the baby that wasn't sleeping.
Yeah.
Another person went to sleep.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's just... But at the time I remember thinking, this is how our nights are going to be for the rest of our lives.
This is how life is just going to be. And it just... It is so not like that. But I have to remind myself, because I'm in danger now of thinking, it's not really that difficult. I mean, there's lots of aspects further on in motherhood that are difficult, but it is that difficult. You know, yeah. You are such a fish out of water when you have that baby.
It's that huge adjustment. Like, it feels like a real learning curve. And even though there are loads of books out there and helpful magazine articles and friends telling you what it's like, nothing will prepare you.
No, nothing doesn't. And actually, I was talking to another friend about this the other day, and we were talking about how actually advice, I think as well, is really useless when you've got a baby. Because firstly, you don't know what anyone else is doing in every minute of their day. So when people say, you know, obviously the Holy Grail, how do you get your baby to sleep? When people say, well, how do you do it? It's pointless having that conversation because it feeds insecurities, because you think, I'm not doing that. But also, if you're not doing a certain aspect of the day that someone else is doing, it might not work for you anyway.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how actually what life and motherhood and those early parts are about is actually just making right and feeling right about what you're doing in that very day. And actually just making someone feel supported about what they're doing, because advice, I just don't really think you can give it.
Yeah, I did this thing when my daughter was a baby where I would ask the same question to 10 different people and then pick the thing that I felt worked for me. And if that didn't work, I would then try something else.
I mean, I always have this phrase in my mind, and I always say, you always have the chance to make someone else feel better. Mm. Just take that chance. You know, I'm not a very controversial person. I'm not going to be that person that says to someone, oh, do you think you should be doing it like that because I did it like this? I kind of listen to what they say and then think, what do they really need me to say right now? They need me to make them feel good about their choice today, not about what the consequences might be if they never sleep their baby in
making
a cot.
Making a rod for your own back.
It's just not helpful. It's because it never ends like that. I did Gina Ford, you know, I always labour on about this. I did Gina Ford with my first two, and then I had my third, and he didn't want to do it. He was like, this isn't for me. And we did things really differently, and it's fine. He's great. They all sleep and then they don't. And the irony now is that I pretty much, I'm separated now, so I have a very nice big inviting bed. Every night pretty much I have someone in my bed, and it is so different to how I parented for the first 2 years. Am I miserable for it? I mean, I'm probably a bit more tired. I've got bigger eye bags, but it's fine. Yeah. You know, it's okay.
It's about you doing what's right for you at that moment.
Yeah, and every, you know, twice a week I'll clamp down and I'll say to them before bed, no one comes in my bed tonight. And you know what? Weirdly, they do listen. They know that mummy's on the edge. But the point is it just, we don't need to parent in this ridiculously restrictive, limited, controlling way.
Yeah. One of my favourite parts of the book is the checklist of box sets.
Oh, I know, the box sets.
And the key to, you know, this is like a nice kind of like, you know, comedy. This one is, you know, if you're feeling a little bit anxious or on the edge, don't watch these ones.
No, exactly. It's funny, when I did that list, I'm a big fan of, you know, box sets, and I watched a lot of Netflix. I watched The Gilmore Girls, which is like my all-time favourite series, which is now way back on trend because of the new one.
I feel like that's probably the perfect thing to watch when you're like,
just makes you feel good,
breastfeeding, because it is such a lovely feel-good. Yeah. You just want that. You want to be like, you know,
you want to move to Connecticut and just live in Stars Hollow.
Yes, and be their friends.
100%, that's what you want to do. So I included that list. But the other reason is that I had lots of mums say to me, why didn't I do that? You know, like when the baby can't move, it is perfectly permissible to sit on the sofa all day long. You know, okay, you need to get out and get some fresh air because that's good for the mood as well. But actually allowing yourself to bottle feed, breastfeed, whatever you're doing, and enjoy that closeness with your baby. You don't need to be at a baby sensory class at 3 months old because your baby needs stimulation.
Why didn't you tell me this when
I know,
age 7 weeks, I was at a baby sensory class.
Wasting your money.
You know, with like a red scarf, waving it above my child's head.
I mean, we all did it. We all did it. I panicked. I felt constantly guilty with my first. You know, should I be doing this? And I bought those Baby Einstein DVDs eBay for 40 quid. And I used to sit in front of the TV and I used to make her watch one at 8 weeks old because I thought, you know, that'll be really good for her. I should have just been watching Gilmore Girls, which is what I ended up doing. But, you know, my third, he hasn't been to, I don't think he's been to a baby class. And he's fine. He's probably the most articulate and most intelligent out of all three
of
them.
Are you sure he's fine, though? Or no, he's not fine. Is he harbouring, you know, some weird, you know, personality defect because he didn't go to baby sensory?
I'm sure it will come back in some years. But it is absolutely. And I also think sometimes when you're, again, when you're tired, it's really difficult to Netflix to go on it and go, or Amazon Prime, whatever you're on, and go, what can I watch? So to have some just films to click into.
Yeah, that's so useful. In that sea of what should I watch?
And also it literally is about making people feel that it is really okay. Because you kind of, it's weird, you know, you've probably gone on maternity leave from a busy job and suddenly you're like, is it okay to just sit here and watch TV? Yeah. Yes. It's perfectly okay.
In fact, it's recommended.
Absolutely.
So what kind of response have you had from women who have read the book?
I created the book. I didn't really know. I always talk about how I feel like the book created itself because it did just come in a very short period of time and it was only going to be like a 16-page leaflet. I just wanted to get a few blog posts that had gone viral out to the masses because what I was getting was that people didn't know about the fourth trimester. You know, I had an obstetrician get in touch with me and say, I've been practicing for 20 years, never heard of it. Really? I'm introducing it in my clinic today.
So your blog was surviving motherhood.
Yeah. And I wrote a post shortly, about 9 weeks after having my third, I discovered the fourth trimester in a spa massage brochure. I was just reading a thing and it said fourth trimester. I was like, what's that? Googled a bit, found out, I was like, oh, this makes perfect sense. And it's obviously the first 3 months after having your baby is an additional trimester where you try and mimic the rest of the you know, your 9 months of pregnancy. Makes perfect sense to me. And it eliminates a lot of worry because you can say, I'm giving myself a time period. Mm-hmm. So if you are a bit controlling, like lots of us are, you can say, I'm going to have 3 months to make my peace, make my transition to motherhood, mm-hmm. you know. And that isn't just baby number one, that's every baby you have. I wrote a post about it. The post went viral. Kirsty Allsop shared it. And it just snowballed. And I realised that people weren't having this information when they needed it. And I had lots of people get in touch and say, I wish I'd known about this. And I decided I wanted to try and get it into the NHS, you know, so that it was kind of going in at the point of, you know, having a baby.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was going to be tricky. So then the book just grew and grew. And the feedback's just been lovely. It's like, people really need it. And actually, I know it sounds really silly, I shouldn't say this, so I'm professional. I'm always really surprised when people are using it. They're actually writing in it. And, you know, I've had lovely, like, you know, Michelle, who writes the lovely Dear Orla blog. And, you know, she's a psychologist and she has actually endorsed it as a tool. And she said, I wish I could give this to every parent I've worked with.
That's amazing.
And it blows my mind just because I wrote it from, as my lovely friend says, you just created it from your brain. I don't have any medical professional experience. And what's happening now is medical professionals, midwives, doctors are endorsing it. And I find that incredible.
That is incredible.
That's what I wanted. I didn't really think about what the book would be other than just wanted new mums to feel supported.
That's the thing, isn't it? I think you were focused on the end goal, on the effect it would have rather than the actual
but
book.
I didn't go through a process. I created it. I you know, I did lots of mood boards. I thought about, you know, I had a great graphic designer who's a friend. We thought about colour and patterns, but there wasn't any psychology behind it. You know, I didn't go, I'm going to do this many journal pages or this, but it just seems to have hit the mark.
Probably because it came from your gut instinct.
Maybe, yeah. And I had experience, obviously, having had postnatal depression. I had done a course, a very, very good, intense course of CBT. So I had some learnings to put into the book. But mums kind of, I get messages, a lot of messages with mums saying, this has really helped me, or it's helped me get some help with postnatal depression. Or a couple have said, I think it's stopped me from going to the place where I think I would have ended up.
Wow.
Really sweet.
You must just be walking around like bouncing on air with this amazing warm glow.
I've definitely come down. The year of launch, the year of self-publishing it and launching it, and then when people started buying it, I was like, wow, this is actually something that people need. And now I feel quite strange. It feels very surreal, definitely.
So your route to publishing it was a bit unusual, wasn't it? So you self-published to begin with. So you and your graphic designer friend created this.
We did.
From scratch.
We did it in a very short space of time. I mean, I think I think we started it. I started writing it in the September, but not properly until the Jan. We had it at the... I sourced a printer's randomly in China.
How do you even start doing
exactly that? I literally Googled China. And this is what I mean about the whole book. It just happened. There was no... I can overthink a lot in my life. I didn't overthink one aspect of this. I wrote it. I didn't have anyone edit it, proof it. I just was like, yeah, this will be okay. I think one of my very good friends, who's also a PA, she proofed it when we got to a certain point. But there was no question of, shall I get someone to professionally do this before I order 3,000 copies and have them delivered to my house?
Wow.
And we just went with it. And it just from that moment that it went off to the printers, I didn't see a finished copy until they turned up on my doorstep.
What was that moment like when you had 3,000 copies turned up?
So I got 3 advanced copies turned up about 3 weeks ahead of the full shipment. And the box turned up and I was like, oh my God.
Was your heart racing?
Yeah, I was shaking. And I went and sat on my bed and I looked at the box. The kids were downstairs playing and I opened it. And the minute I saw it, the print quality was... They did such a good job on it. It was amazing. I mean, this is China. They do this like that, don't they? But... the colour, it was far better than I ever imagined it could ever have looked. And I cried. I was like, it's a book.
It's my fourth baby.
Yeah, it's an actual book. And then the shipment turned up when I was on holiday. And I had paid...
Did your neighbour take it in?
Oh my gosh. It was almost that bad. I had a friend and I just bunged him 50 quid and said... He had a bit of time off and he was like, it's fine, I'll do it for you. And... He sent me a picture. I was on a beach in Turkey and he sent me a picture and went, this is what 3,000 books looks like. It was a flipping lorry. It was huge. It was the hottest day of the year and it took him 4 hours to shift all the books. I'd literally cleared a space in my spare room. And I got back from holiday. They were all at the top end. That top end of the lounge was filled. The spare room was filled. They were in my bedroom. It was 2.5 tons of books.
Oh my goodness.
Insane.
That's crazy.
Hadn't thought it through, that part.
So then fast forward to this year.
Yeah,
and
this
now
year.
It's been republished by Penguin,
it
hasn't
has,
it?
It has, yeah. So in February, March of this year, I got an offer from them. I was actually, at that time, I was actually talking to an agent about another book. And she was like, can we talk about this book? And I was like, I've done that now. And she's like, but it's really good. So she sent it off with the proposal for the next book, which I am now writing. And then about 2 weeks after that, we had the offer from Penguin saying that they would like to buy it and distribute it throughout the world.
That's amazing. And you're working on the second book now,
aren't you? The second book is called The Not So New Mum's Notebook. And it is a book for, basically with the New Mum's Notebook goes up to 12 months. So the next book is going to be early years. So it's going to be from year one right up until they start school. So everything, all the challenges that encompasses for mums.
I'm going to buy that. Even though my daughter is 7, I feel like there will be a lot in there that I can
learn.
I
mean, the thing of the books as well is that they're not baby journals and they're not, there's little bits that you can record some milestones and stuff for your kids, but they are about mums and mums' wellness and mums' mental well-being and all the things. And I want the next book to really try and get us back in tune with how we can see the challenges of motherhood in a more positive, more liberating way. Because I think my experience of motherhood has been quite claustrophobic at times, and I've got very hung up on things that I absolutely shouldn't have got hung up on.
What kind of thing?
Things, catastrophizing stuff. Mm. So a very common thing that I think mums do is feel that every step they make is going towards a drastic, dark place that they'll never come back from and that their kids will never come back from. And as my kids grow, I can see that if I live in that perpetual state, I'm going to probably be crazy by the time, because it's getting harder. You know, the things I'm having to deal with now with an 8-year-old, you know, your daughter's 7, the things I'm having to deal with now are way harder than what I was doing when I was trying to get them to sleep.
And the consequences seem bigger, don't they?
Yeah, and I can't drive myself nuts thinking all the time, am I doing this wrong? Should I be doing it like this? And what I think we need to get better at doing is living in tune with how we're living in a period of a day rather than how we're living for the next 5-10 years, because you think about the future, and that's what you do when you have a newborn. You constantly think, when the baby doesn't sleep that night, you think about the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And it's never helpful. And so I really want the next book to just that's why I call it early years, but actually I reckon you could buy it if you had an 8-year-old, because it's going to be about helping the mum with the challenges she faces. And actually, the challenges pretty much persist, don't they? You know, getting out of the house, looking after yourself. And I've learned a lot in the last few years about how much self-care we need to do. And I just think that the role of being a mother needs to evolve. I think we've gone maybe too far from our parents' generation, where we live motherhood, we talk about it, we read about it, we don't ever come away from it. Mm. And what I kind of really want to get back to is the place that we are actually women first and we're mothers second. And being a strong, you know, not always strong, but a strong woman with the role of mother secondary is okay. And I think that's great for our kids to learn.
What I love, Amy, is that you're sitting there with your This Girl Can t-shirt.
Do you know what? I put this on deliberately this morning. Do you know why? Because I haven't worn this for about 8 months, and I love a slogan tee. Don't we love a slogan tee? And when I'm feeling a bit like I can't do something, this weirdly is what I gravitate towards. And this morning I was feeling a bit like, been getting that Sunday night feeling recently, and I don't know where it's come back from, because my last year has been full of really great energy, and suddenly I'm feeling it dip a bit. This morning I was like, I'm going to remind myself that this girl can.
Yeah, and I'm sitting here wearing my mother t-shirt.
And I almost wore my mother one.
Did you?
We would have been sitting together.
Yeah, no, I'm enjoying the fact that you're wearing This Girl Can. It ties in with what you're saying. It's actually really good.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
So obviously, you know, you've written your blog for the last few years, Surviving Motherhood, and, you know, you've got your book out now, and you've spoken in the past about how your experiences with postnatal depression have kind of, you know, led you on this journey and to where you are today.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, having my third child has changed my life in absolutely every way possible. I mean, you know, I got postnatal depression. I knew very early on that time that it was. I think I probably had it both times, but I wouldn't have known first time because I didn't know how you were supposed to feel with a baby. Third time round, it definitely got progressively worse. And I think also the challenge of having two other children to look after meant it was very, very difficult to ignore. But hands down, the best thing that's ever happened to me, because it just made me confront loads of stuff that, you know, I've pretty much know I've had health anxiety since I was probably 9 or 10. And it's, you know, it's got worse at periods in my life and better. But that was one of my prevailing symptoms with the postnatal depression, was that I thought I was going to die. And I just couldn't get ailments out of my head. And it was very, very paralyzing. Mm. And, you know, that on top of trying to look after three kids was just impossible. So I went to the doctors. In fact, I was diagnosed at home. My practice nurse had seen me because I had a really unfortunate set of circumstances after I had my third. My poor dad was diagnosed with cancer and had a major operation. And around that time, it was school holidays. So I had my third beginning of the school holidays. So I had 10, I think he was 10 days old. And then I went on school holidays. You know what London's like. Everyone just disappears.
Yeah.
Not loads of my friends had thirds, so they were with older kids and off went and doing stuff. And I was stuck indoors. Couldn't see my family really that much because they had loads going on. Then my middle child got chickenpox, so we couldn't leave the house. Mm. Then we eventually, at the end of that period, I think my third was about 5 weeks, we went on holiday. And the first day, my eldest daughter slammed a fire door on my middle daughter's toe and amputated the top of her toe.
Oh, you're kidding.
It was basically, then about a week later, her bone got infected and they thought she had osteomyelitis. So she then got admitted to hospital. So basically, that's when it all came crashing down. I was staying in hospital at St. Thomas's at the Evelina while she had an operation and she was on an intravenous drip to have antibiotics. She was only 2.5, had a 6-week-old baby. And then I had to then go and have it dressed every week, got reinfected. Basically, this foot injury went on for 3 months and she couldn't wear shoes. And I just had another child that had extra care needed and I just couldn't cope with it. And then I started getting the panic attacks. And so I think I was a combination of someone who was predisposed to it, someone who'd probably had it before undiagnosed, and someone who had unfortunate circumstances. And the combination was just, you know, like that. But my practice nurse had seen me at the clinic the week before, and she just said there was something that wasn't right in me. She could just tell. And she called me one day, and I think my phone was off, the blinds were shut. It was a proper, you know, next thing I know, the doorbell's gone. I'm in my pyjamas. It's probably like midday on a Tuesday. And she's opened the door and she's just stood there. Actually, do you know what? Actually, it's making me feel quite teary now, which is weird because it hasn't for a long time. Oh, breathe. Anyway, she said, I don't think you're quite right. I don't know why I'm crying. So bizarre.
Just take a moment.
I haven't cried for ages about this. I said, I don't think I'm very well. And she said, I don't think you are. And she came in and she got me into the surgery that afternoon. I'm sorry that I'm crying. And she had me in that afternoon and I saw my doctor, who I have a really good relationship with. And she put me, she said, if I would, at that point, I was so unwell, I would have taken absolutely anything to get better. She said, you know, you're going to need to take some antidepressants. I was like, give me whatever you can to make me feel better. I took antidepressants. They take a few weeks to work. Luckily, I had some really good friends who had depression and anxiety, and they said, you know, it won't be overnight. It will take time to get better. And this practice nurse had done the first visit of her 30-year career. She just had, and you know, I feel so humbled by that even now. The fact that she saw that there was something wrong, and she didn't just gloss over it. She came to my house, you know.
If she hadn't come round.
If she hadn't, I think I would have got there anyway, but I don't think I would have got there that day. And I think it was really crucial for me because I think I was really unwell by the point that I got there.
Yeah.
And then the antidepressants, I couldn't believe I was ever going to feel well. And I had friends who had taken them who said, you will be fine. You will get better. But I had lots of physical ailments. I had very foggy, I couldn't see properly. I had lots of fog. I was very teary. I couldn't do basic things like get in the car. You know, it was basic stuff was overwhelming for me. And then probably about 4 weeks in, I started CBT privately. You know, I was fortunate in that I could afford to do it privately. And it was something I just had to do. And the combination of the CBT and the medication was, you know, 6 weeks into taking the medication, I felt the physical, you know, I felt the anxiety diminishing, and the CBT absolutely changed every element of my life. You know, I use it every single day. And even when, you know, anxiety for me is something I will live with, and the depression, not so much. I mean, I stayed on the antidepressants for almost 3 years. I spent one whole year coming off them very, very, very slowly. And then one day I just felt really good and I ran out of my prescription and I thought, I don't think I need to take these anymore. But that's happened before and I haven't been ready.
Yeah.
And this time I just came off them and it was fine, but I will always have to manage it. And I'm really aware of my triggers and I just think it's definitely something. You know, I had a little bit of anxiety in the summer because, you know, something else that came out of my third child was that my marriage, you know, broke down. And my marriage broke down when he was 2 and we decided to separate. Most empowering, liberating thing I have ever done. But a year on, there's new challenges coming out of that. So the empowered feeling, which I still feel very positive about, is slightly replaced by other aspects that, you know, you can't help sometimes but feel guilt and worry about your kids. And, you know, there's the potential of new partners on the horizon. All those things bring new emotions and feelings. And, you know, this summer I did my first holiday with them. I took them abroad for 10 days on my, well, 9 days on my own.
What was that like?
It was, well, I thought it was amazing. It was amazing. I was, I went back to a place that I've been to 3 times. So I absolutely knew I could do it. And I knew we got friends there. I knew it was the absolute right arena to do it in. But I, now I am back, I know that that made me very anxious. Mm. And yet I didn't really acknowledge the anxiety. The day before I went, I thought, what am I doing? And it actually very interestingly brought up a lot of the health anxiety. Because one of my fears was that one of them was going to get lost through passport control. One of them's going to drown. But the other thing was just a sense of my mortality. I'm on my own with 3 kids. The responsibility is mine. What if something happens to me? Mm. And actually, now I'm back and my anxiety's completely diminished again, I realised that was a massive trigger for me. But I did it. We had a great holiday. We had a really good time. Kids loved it. I felt very strong that I now know there's another milestone I've hit. And it was all good.
Yeah. So thinking back to those early days, it kind of feels like really important that the people around a new mum are aware of postnatal depression and what the signs are, because it's so easy to miss. And, in your experience, if that nurse hadn't come back, how long would it have taken for you or the people around you? Because when you're in it, you know, like my own personal experience, I'm sure we've spoken about this, in the past, Amy, but... You know, I when my daughter was 18 months old, I had this real light bulb moment where I thought, oh my God, I think I've had postnatal depression.
Yeah, and I remember you saying that.
Didn't realise it going through it. And it was only in hindsight. And I think when you are going through it, it's really hard to identify. And also, in my mind, you know, I'm like, you know... semi-intelligent woman, you know.
Very intelligent, Alison.
I read books, I read magazines, I feel, you know, like...
But you're in tune with it.
Yeah, yet there I was with, you know, a 3-month, 6-month, 12-month old baby, miserable, struggling, definitely on the edge.
Yeah.
And I didn't realise. I thought that postnatal depression was, you know, I guess similar to what you were talking about, you know, being in the house, curtains drawn, you know, in the dark, not wanting to leave the house. Yeah. But actually what I know now is that there are different shades of PND.
I think like anything, there's different levels, totally. I think there's, you know, there's different functioning levels of PND. Mm. And I think the first 2 times, because my circumstances didn't catapult me to that final place, I think that I probably had a functioning version of postnatal depression.
Yeah.
But postnatal depression is very cruel because when you're in it, you know you're in a fog and you know you feel the worst that you've ever felt. But you can't always see that you're in it and you don't know what's normal. And there's a lot of that, like, this is how I'm supposed to feel. Yeah.
I totally thought that every mum was going through the same as me, but that I just wasn't coping with it quite as well.
I think for anyone listening that's thinking, well, do I have it? Do I not have it? I think, you know, I think what becomes apparent is the kind of the persistency of it. So if you have like the odd day where you feel a bit low, I think that that's very normal when you have a baby. If most days or every day or a good deal of a period in every day is, you know, dominated by feeling teary, low, overwhelmed,
anxious,
then no, I don't think those things are normal, because you shouldn't have to feel like that. And you don't have to feel like that. And postnatal depression, I mean, someone said to me the other day, who's got older children, who has suffered from depression, well, how do you know if it's postnatal depression? And I'm like, well, postnatal depression is actually just a term, as my doctor told me. It's depression.
Mm.
But we call it postnatal because it comes after a period of having a baby. So there's a reason. And there are reasons. You know, hormones can totally affect how you are. We know that.
We have had so many conversations about hormones, haven't we?
Us and our flipping hormones. And, you know, that's definitely but people get quite hung up on that because they say, well, I can't have postnatal depression because my baby's now 3. Well, now you have depression.
Mm.
But you probably had postnatal and you didn't realise, or it didn't get addressed. Mm. And I don't think it's something that goes away.
Yeah.
And like I say, it just becomes, you know, postnatal is a term that we describe because of when it happens.
Mm.
But I think anyone, you know, and it's a difficult thing. If you're a person supporting someone or around a new mum that you think has postnatal depression, it's really important how you approach it, because it's a really scary thing. It's probably one of the things when a mum starts to feel low that she panics about. I don't want to have postnatal depression.
Well, no.
Because already she's in the place where she's taking medication, which she doesn't want to do because no one ever wants to do that.
And there's definitely a stigma attached to it still.
Yeah, and there shouldn't be, because I was on medication for 3 years. I will not hesitate to go back on it if I ever need to again in my life. And I have friends that are what they call lifers. They're like, I'm staying on this forever because it works for me. Mm. And there should be no stigma with it, because it has a reason. You know, your brain isn't producing serotonin, and you need that to have the happy thoughts. So when your brain isn't producing it, it needs an injection of it to then learn to produce it again itself. What happened to me this year was I got to a point where life was getting, you know, so much better for me, and I was so much happier that I almost think I was getting too much serotonin because I was putting it in my body and my body was producing it. I knew enough about my body and how it worked to have the confidence to go, I don't need this right now. Mm. You know, 6 months' time, I might need it again and I'll address it then. But I think if you're a person supporting a mum and you're in any doubt or you're worried about her or you're thinking that maybe she's not in the place she is, you know, I had some friends that felt they could broach it and say, you know, I'm not sure that you're doing so well. How are you feeling? And sometimes it's about asking that question and giving that person an opportunity to talk about how they're feeling. Because when you have a baby, you forget that you're allowed to still count as well. It becomes very much about the baby and their needs.
Yeah.
So we need to remember that mums actually need
definitely
that support as well.
And I would also say, I would add to that, that if you are listening and you think that you might, and you're trying to work out whether what you feel is postnatal depression or not, it is always good to have that conversation with friends around you, you know, with a medical professional.
Yeah.
And not to feel stupid, not to feel like you shouldn't ask the question. I remember about 3 or 4 years ago feeling quite cross when I read an article or a blog post written by Esther Walker, where she was talking about how it kind of felt to her, I think she was saying that it felt to her that there were so many women saying or thinking they had PND when actually motherhood is just hard.
Yeah.
And I felt I agree with her to a point, but I felt quite cross because I felt like if anyone reads this
and it discourages
them from going to ask for help, then I feel like that's doing motherhood and, you know, womankind a huge disservice.
Yeah, and I think actually when you have periods, I mean, crikey, there's a period in every day that's frustrating and hard. But actually, and I try, this is where my focus is now. I try, because of my CBT and other things that other, you know, experiences that have come in my across my path, I do try to see motherhood I'm trying to see it more as a privilege and a positive thing, not in an alienating way, because it's not always going to feel like that. But I want to try and sit on that side of the fence rather than the this is so hard, because when we keep telling ourselves it's so hard, it just becomes harder.
Yeah.
And you know, there are days and there are moments that all the positive thought are never going to necessarily change how you feel. But actually, it is not normal to feel day in, day out like this is awful and overwhelming and sad and joyless. You know, it's not. And if we accept that, then that's a really depressing way to live this very long journey of motherhood.
That's so true. So true. Okay, Amy, onto some lighter things. Some quick fire questions for you.
Oh, exciting.
What's your favourite cake or biscuit you through a tough day of
parenting?
The
really sad thing is I know this instantly. I love a Victoria sponge a good Victoria sponge.
Old school.
With jam and freshly whipped cream. I also love like a piece of, and actually this is in the new mum's notebook, chocolate fridge cake.
Oh, okay.
Which is basically melted chocolate with anything you've got in the cupboard chucked in, bunged in the fridge. Eat it in a big slab. It's nice. Like a big, massive rocky road. Good.
Have you got any just now? No, I quite fancy that.
Go knock some up.
And what's the worst piece of parenting advice you've ever been given?
Oh my gosh. We all know it. And you know what? I'm in danger of doing it when I'm in a happy day and my kids are at school and nursery. Enjoy them while they're young. Mm. Just don't ever tell anyone that. No. We know that. We love them. We enjoy them. We think they're amazing. Telling us to do it just doesn't make me want to do it. It makes me want to hit you over the head with her.
I also think that does kind of diminish the struggles you have when they're young.
It does. And I see why people do it. And now my kids are getting older. I can see myself. I'm not going to say it because I will shoot myself, but I can see why people say it, because they are at a part, they're at a point in their journey where they're missing that closeness.
Yeah.
And what they're doing is going, it does go quick, and it does. You know, my little tiny baby is 8. She's massive. She's, you know, she's up to my shoulders now. I have to ask her to sit down so I can plait her hair. You know, it's that sort of thing. And I know why they say it, but just don't say it.
No, please never say it.
When you're in it, no way. Never say it. Doesn't feel joyful always.
What's been your most embarrassing mum moment?
Oh, there are so many. I mean, there was one time where literally when I was working full time and I was trying to get out of the house, you know, that lovely period of time at 7:45 where I couldn't find the comb to do my daughter's hair and there was a fork. So I grabbed it, and this is a true story, I grabbed it and I combed her hair and I was like, that works surprisingly well. There was another time that was really awful where, and I'm still a bit like this, I mean, my school are so lovely that they often ring me to remind me that they've got a school trip, or, and especially now that I've separated, I feel like sometimes they look out for me a bit more. Aww. Because they know I'm, you know, I've got the 3 kids.
Yeah.
Sometimes they call me and go, you know, Amy, just to let you know, it's a school trip tomorrow, we need a packed lunch. I'm like, thanks for that. There was one time where all the kids had tuck shop and all the kids had to have a purse sent in, and I'd sent my purse in, obviously forgot to name it for my daughter because I just forgot, that's what I do. Sent the purse in anyway. When the purse came back that day, it had been beautifully labelled by my daughter's teacher, and I said to my daughter, I'm so sorry, I totally forgot. And I said, oh, Mrs. M must think I'm such a rubbish mother. And she said, she does, Mum, but don't worry, you're not.
Oh.
And it's just peak moments like that for me. Yeah. There's lots of moments like that. But again, they are moments that I now try and laugh about, yeah, and my kids laugh about. They're not real big dramas. You know, so you forgot to send in your after-school snack. It's just about making your peace with the fact that you are a flawed, beautiful human being.
And we and all are. Okay. We all are, you know.
But that's the stuff that first time round I used to beat myself up about. I try to do a bit less of that now.
Good, good, good. I would like you to show me what's really in your bag.
My bag? Which bag do you have? Oh, this is actually quite embarrassing.
Oh, my goodness.
Right, hang on, what is in my bag?
Is that your book in there? No.
No,
I saw the pink.
Funny. My diary's in here.
Chaos.
Which
love
is
it.
My life. What is in my bag?
That's a very nice diary.
It's quite a nice diary, isn't it? I like a paper diary. Squat goals.
Water bottle with squat goals written on it. You look a pun, don't you?
Yeah. I'm not doing any squats, actually. This is hilarious. This is something that's being returned, which Alison isn't going to say out loud, but she can just...
Yeah. Let's just say it is something that you might buy in Ann Summers. It's being returned, is it?
Yeah. Oh, it's definitely being
I'm
returned.
Not sure I believe you.
Oh, my gosh. My bag. I literally change my bag about 7 times a week.
It's a very nice bag. So it's kind of like a army print.
Do you know what it is? It's a Gem and B camouflage changing bag. I don't need changing bags. I bought this 2 months ago. I don't change any nappies anymore.
Well,
but I'm addicted to them.
This bag I've got here, this is my bag. This is a change bag too.
See?
I honestly think that as a mum, no matter
they're great,
what,
aren't they?
What pocket.
I bought this to go on holiday, and the reason being is that it's got so many great compartments. So I stuffed it. I mean, look, I've got all my Crayola colour-free pens there. It makes me sound like I've deloaded drawing with my kids. Mouldy old Satsuma.
Nice.
Standard. Did you really hope for something glamorous? Like
no.
Lip gloss?
No, to be honest, the whole point of this is to show what people really have in their bags,
okay,
rather than, you know, what they pretend to have
right,
in their bags.
Good. So I've got a nice mix. 3 oat cakes. Slightly opened. Oh,
the Satsuma's on the move.
A couple of random sherbet dip things. Just really healthy. Ah, and now this is good because this isn't really me. I've actually got a spare set of clothes in here.
For your youngest.
And he's actually really toilet trained well and doesn't really need them.
Just in case.
But I've never done it. So I was like, I've got a changing bag. Let's put something in it.
Love it.
And I think a couple of pairs of sunglasses cases with no sunglasses.
With no sunglasses.
Because my kids have nicked them and I don't know where they are. And... what is this? Oh, yeah, this is a list of how much money I owe Computer Club at school. Because I'm so behind with paying my bills. Are you like that?
Do you know what? You just reminded me that I keep getting messages from my daughter's dance club saying that we owe them, and if we don't pay, she doesn't get to go next week.
But she keeps going. I haven't paid brownies for like 2 terms. Oh, and this, which, you know, my sleep mask.
I love that.
Just in case I want to, like, I don't know, sit in a coffee shop and have 40 winks.
So it's a neon pink sleep mask with ZZZZZZ written on it. Can Why have you got that in your bag?
I'm not quite sure.
That's so random.
Oh, and this is good, isn't it? The old, when you go to Lidl and you get the old stickies, have you had these?
Oh, yes, they're brilliant.
And you get, like, if you spend quite a bit, you get like 40 loads of them, and you're like, these are the bane of my life. I find them everywhere.
They're amazing.
So very unglamorous, I'm afraid, Anson.
Thank you very much, Amy. I love that. I feel like you're definitely keeping it real with that bag. Listen, thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, thank you for having me.
It has been brilliant to talk to you.
Oh, you know I love you and your stuff, so thank you so much, Alison.
Thank you. So hopefully you enjoyed listening to this just as much as I enjoyed recording it. Thank you as always for listening, and please do review and rate on iTunes because it really helps. And I'll catch up with you next time.